G'day expats and welcome to another episode of Expat Chat, episode 52 today, and joined by my esteemed colleague and mate, James Ridley, who's the Managing Director of the Asia and Americas region. G'day, James.
G'day, Brett, and welcome everyone to listening to today's episode. As always, joined by Brett Evans, the Founder and Managing Director for Atlas Wealth in the EMEA region. Brett, how's the sandpit treating you today, mate?
Mate, summer's here.
You got the polo on.
I'm on the way to physio, so this side here.
Physio, of course. Yep.
Physio today. But yes, it's I think the relative, what they call the heat index, which is like the relative, you know, temperature when you take account humidity, was 52 or 53 yesterday. So it's getting up there. Summer's here with a vengeance. Everyone's in this place at the moment. School's finished. And people are looking for cooler climates.
Yeah, I bet. So it sounds obviously like there's a bit of a mass exodus around this time because summer's just, summer's a bit ridiculous over there, isn't it?
We're pretty lucky. I mean, normally May's hot and then June's hotter. May was pretty good, but then June's has come and smacked us in the face. And, the details are just, you know, when you look at the numbers, you know, they're talking about 50-degree temps. That's not even taking into account the heat index, plus up to 70% humidity in some locations. Wild and woolly. But that's right. Well, we've got AC. feel sorry for those working outside, but for those that's inside, it's not too bad. Just don't go outside.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I guess today it's the last day of the financial year, which is nice. Happy end of Australian financial year. Everyone listening, that's how.
I think everyone's happy to see the end of this second quarter, second half of the financial year.
In the rear view.
First half started well, second half not so well.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see how the first quarter of next year, tomorrow, starts. I think the big one to me that I'm really keen to see what happens is next Tuesday when the RBA meets again. And the rate rise is a given, whether it's 25 or 50 bips. Don't forget, I've got a carton of beer on 50. So we'll see if that comes true.
That's right. You talk to just, you know, you even said it before the call today, you know, talking to see how everyone's going at work and everything seems busy. You know, people aren't being laid off or anything like that. You know, there's plenty of work going on. So it will be interesting. I agree. Interest rates, we know sort of where they're heading. I think the 1 year Australian government bond was pricing sort of 2.6% yield. That's in 12 months time of where the potential RBA rate could go. I was going to say probably 0.25 and then 0.5. But I think 0.5, looking at how markets are pricing in, 0.5 is pretty reasonable, to be honest. Really excited though to get earnings season. Earnings season well under on its way. We'll get some of those good reports coming out in the next sort of 1 to 3 months. Gives us that insight into the first start of the year as well as financial year. But financial year, you know, it's taken the first 6 months, which is hard to read too much into because it's very accommodative, that environment, the last 6 months of last year. Now we're really in the thick of it. It'd be good to see how, you know, your typical ASX blue chip type companies have performed and how markets have priced, you know, obviously the current market and obviously companies, whether they've gone, you know, too low. You know, they've taken bets on companies not being worth those kind of future cash flows, which I think there'll be a lot of misses, to be honest. I reckon there'll be some good results posted and markets will have obviously their day, but we'll just have to wait and see. Earnings season, it's always a good time.
No, I completely agree. And that's the biggest thing, I think, is we love that coalface feedback, that data.
Data.
And it's not so much the number, but also the guidance that the CEOs give. You know, if they're talking a bad story, then guess what? Yeah, we're in this grind for longer. I don't think that will. I think there'll be a bit of hesitancy, but I don't think it'll be the doom and gloom that the market's priced in right now.
No, I agree. I think naturally, you know, they'll always tread carefully with whatever they're saying, but I agree. I think there's just quality companies out there which are priced well under their fair value. And I think some of those companies are going to actually do quite well through earnings season, because once they start reporting some of the profits and revenue, the market will eat that up and there'll be some good little jumps there. So yes, it'll be a good earnings season. Get a bit of a lens into potentially the next 6 months. But mate, we're digressing. I want to talk about an important topic today.
We're talking about Singapore, Australian expats.
Yeah, Yeah, that's right, mate. Plenty of Aussie expats in Singapore. I think last time I checked. Yeah, well, I was going to say, last time I checked, I think the population of Aussies over there, it's above 25, probably closer to 30,000, to be honest. So there's a really big cohort of Aussies over there doing terrific things. And I've come across this nasty exit tax, and I sort of read about it a little while ago, and now sort of I've helped a few clients try and plan for it practically as they've left Singapore. And it's something which doesn't really get a voice or talked about. And it's probably mainly due to the fact that everyone that's in Singapore understands that there's no capital gains tax. You know, there's no capital gains tax on direct shares. Property's a different basket. But, you know, when you're over there and you're working from one of the big corporates, you might be given a lot of shares dumped onto you. Now, before I go any further, I'm going to let Brett do his jingle and disclaimer.
All information that you're about to hear, receive, and infuse into your brain should be treated as information and entertainment purposes only. Please speak to a professional like Atlas if you have any questions.
That's great, man. I love the word infuse there. Good use. Now, as we dive into this topic, again, taking a step back. So when we're over there working for, say, one of the corporates, and we're lucky enough to receive shares as part of our employment agreement. Let's say you received an amount when you first sign up, and then there's sort of a bit of a vesting cliff after 1 year and 3 years, and then you get these quarterly vests. There's a lot of different types of sort of, I suppose, equity stock incentives where you receive restricted stock units where you're just given shares. And then you might receive employee share options, which they're given to you when you sign up, but they have to vest over a certain period. And every quarter, you know, there's a bit of a cliff where, okay, this portion they're vested to, you can now exercise them if you want or not. Very common when you're residing in Singapore, if you are given employee share options, you can exercise them, but at that time, you don't actually pay any tax. And if you've got any which are still vesting to you, then, you know, they're just in the rear view, or I suppose they're over to the side. You're not really worried about them. Now, when you leave Singapore and you, say, get assigned onto another location, whether it's the US, Hong Kong, somewhere in Europe, or you get sent back to Australia, if you do have employee stock options, which are still vesting to you, regardless of them still vesting to you, you're not being able to yield any value from them. You actually have to pay tax on them on the month prior to your termination on the local Singaporean employer. So this can really catch out a lot of Aussie expats, because if you think about a hypothetical situation where you might have a considerable amount of options just dumped on you, but they're still vesting over, say, a 5 to 10 year period. So you can't do anything with them. You can't obviously exercise them. You can't get to that value. But the fact that you have to pay tax on them when you leave, even though they're still vesting, means, you know, if you've got, say, options worth $1 million, that $1 million can very quickly turn into a very large tax bill, you know, maybe an additional $250,000-$300,000 on top of what your income tax bill might be when you leave. And that's something that I've seen personally with a client recently. And it's a bit of a nasty shock. But ordinarily, when you're in other countries, the way that these, say, restricted stock units or shares or employee stock options and the tax is paid, usually it's a case when you exercise these options, a portion of the tax comes out of you actually exercising the options. So shares are sold down straight away, and that is essentially tax withheld at a fixed rate, depending on your employer and your income level. And that's sent to, say, the IRS or the ATO or another taxation authority. But in Singapore, not actually the case. And that's why this is a bit of a nasty exit tax, which does come out of nowhere, to be honest, because naturally you're in Singapore, low tax environment, cost of living, obviously a bit higher than Australia, no capital gains tax. It's not a consideration, not something you really think about.
Yep. And also too, I think the other concern is you get 7 days to pay.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, give us the money over the next 30, 60, 90 days. No, here's the bill. We need the money in 7 days.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's probably one of the issues, because you really don't want to piss off the IRD over there. And, you know, everything sort of feeds into one other department, you know, your visa. Okay, you don't pay your tax, and they might have the powers to actually lock your bank accounts and take it directly from your bank account, which they can do, to be honest, in some countries. So it is a bit concerning that, yeah, a lot of expats have probably actually been caught out by this. I would say actually during COVID as well. But we're seeing that this theme is slowly starting to develop when they relocate, but they've got these really long-term employee stock options for the next 5 years that are still vesting. They can't get at them. They can't do anything with them, but they've still got to pay tax on it when they exit Singapore. So it's it definitely means that, you know, obviously planning ahead, making sure you are well informed, seeking the right tax advice, and yes, having a strategy around this, not just say keeping all your eggs in one basket, being say your employee shares, diversifying. I did do that sort of post on LinkedIn a little while ago about diversifying.
A podcast on that a couple of episodes ago. Employees with employer stock options and those sort of things. And
yeah,
to me, I think where this gets even more complex is the fact that you may not actually have the money because they're vesting. So it sort of reminds me of, you know, the Danish ETF rule. If you're holding, you're living in Denmark and you're holding non-Danish ETFs, then they'll do a mark to market and tax you on the unrealized capital gain of those ETFs for the coming year. Even though you haven't crystallized anything, you still have to pay that tax. And this is the same. You know, you can have $10 million worth of bloody unvested stock options out there.
Yeah. And
you'll get a monster bill, but you've got no cash from it.
No, so not at all. And I mean, in this sort of hypothetical, they're lucky to have the cash available, but I would expect that there's probably been cases where they've, you know, let's say they're working for one of the tech sectors. Let's say that their termination date was recent, last couple of months. They've been holding onto shares, and this is probably a worst case scenario, to be honest. It's already played out in my head. They have gone to exit their employer, let's say in May. Share markets obviously tanked in the US, and so have a lot of those tech stocks. And they get given this tax bill. And it's because obviously they're leaving the company, but they've got all these options, you know, going out to 4 or 5 years, which are worth, you know, $1 million, $2 million. And all of a sudden they actually need to sell a large portion of maybe their shares. And they're selling it at the worst time they possibly could. And depending on what they've done with those shares and those capital and those assets, maybe they don't have the cash. So now they're scrambling, going, okay, crap, how do I find and access this cash for this big tax bill? The IRD is not someone I want to piss off. Do they need to now go and speak to their mortgage broker to get an equity loan to pay the tax bill? Do they need to sell some other assets to, you know, get access to this quickly? So it just is a representation that there are still hidden exit taxes, regardless of what country you come from or you're going to. Because this is a clear example. Singapore, we love Singapore knowing that it's a capital gains tax environment. But again, there are taxes. They are just hidden.
They're hidden. And now I think that's the, probably the tagline we'll use for this episode, you know, that being a hidden tax inside Singapore, because it's almost like the exit tax or the hard tax act coming out of the US in some way. That a lot of people realize as soon as you break that 8-year mark and you qualify based on either your worldwide assets and or your income, you need to pay to remove yourself, to take away the clutches of the respective tax authorities.
Well, taking the hard act further, the worst thing about that stupid rule is it is also a type of inheritance tax, but I won't go into that today. The way that it operates, you have to do a deemed disposal on, yes, your worldwide assets, and put it on paper when you give back your green card or your citizenship. But secondly, it's also on things that you might not be able to get access to, like your superannuation or your 401k. Because yes, you shouldn't be taxing your 401k until 59 and a half, so you don't cop that penalty tax. But paying tax on something that you can't actually get any value from for maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 years, significantly damaging. And it just goes to show that, yes, regardless of sort of the country you're in, there always can be these hidden taxes, and you really need to educate yourself and have a plan in place just in case.
Well, that's pretty much the purpose of the whole podcast, isn't it? You know, it's you don't know what you don't know. And our job is to inform everyone, whether they're clients or not. We're pretty agnostic when it comes to that. You know, we certainly cheer for Australian expats, particularly. Mm. And that's the big thing, is just getting this message out there so people can share it, because, you know, we are seeing this more and more as people are starting to move around, especially with borders now reopening. There's going to be more of these sort of issues. And you know, our job is just to highlight this to folks and say, hey, heads up, you may not like it, but this is coming down the line.
Yeah, yeah. I think one thing that's coming down the line, those residency rules, we'll wait and see. That's going to be very interesting. And unfortunately, a lot of expats which aren't in a, we'll say a country or zone that has a DTA with Australia, will be caught out with that 45-day rule. That'll be, yeah, some strict advice going down that pathway.
They're doing the mini budget in October. So
yeah,
so while the betting man, that's when we're going to get the guidance. So we're just going to keep trying to get this petition through Canberra before then, get it in front of politicians before then, and hopefully positively influence their
Yeah, we'll wait and see. We've always got a shared opinion on Canberra and what they've done in the past. So, and Labor's shown support for updating this as well. I mean, I agree that residency rules need to be updated. Come on, 1936 Tax Act, what were we doing sailing ships back then? No, not that. You know, that's kind of a bit far. But it does need to be updated. The rules are, quite punitive in terms of the day count. They need to improve that a little bit. The 45 days, it's that sort of universal annual leave, sick leave sort of that they've taken. But it's just not enough, especially given the current environment, COVID-19 and other things now. So it'd be very interesting to see what happens and what they come out with.
Look, that's the thing. I think our pitch has always been in that the inequitable treatment of expats in countries with and without a DTA. It's not that person's problem that Treasury hasn't done a DTA with that country. So they can't just do this. I mean, I agree completely. I love a black and white piece of legislation. Yeah, the yes or no expat. But there needs to be some sort of flexibility and malleability for those who don't have a tiebreaker clause to rely upon. And there's going to be a lot of mitigating circumstances as to why you might break that 45 days, but it doesn't necessarily mean you've got enduring ties to Australia. So visiting sick family or even holidays, all three.
Well, I mean, this is the thing I've been thinking about. I wonder if it's going to cause more issues for the ATO with increased tax determinations, because some of the rules with that 45-day, if you're coming back for a work trip, say for 3 weeks, and a lot of expats, Aussies, they do have to fly back to Australia for several, weeks and then go back. I mean, and they're staying maybe with friends, family, whatever it might be. But I wonder if this is going to open up the ATO to a lot of tax determinations, because the ATO has records of their, travel dates back and forth from Australia, and whether it's actually going to cause more of an issue for the ATO around residency rules. I honestly could see it, to be honest. With you being over in the Gulf region, is there ever any talks, or have you heard of anything with DTAs with Australia? Probably not, to be honest, because there's no tax.
Talk at the moment of getting some sort of like free trade agreement set up between the UAE and Australia. But when I've spoken to government officials about the possibility of a DTA, they said unequivocally the Treasury Department has no inclination of setting up DTAs with low or no tax environments. So to me, I think the UAE wants one. And we are heading towards a taxable environment. Next year, company tax comes in.
Yes.
They've got to get rid of a lot of nonsense fees and charges that we pay in lieu of a personal income tax, which, when you go through and add up the 5% municipality fee, and there's a lot of fees that we pay, knowledge fees, don't know where that comes from, but anyway, when you go and add them up, we're almost paying a tax here in Dubai. We call it the Dubai tax fees.
Yeah.
So I think if they did, and I can see Dubai and UAE for greater, following a UAE, a Singapore model when it comes to tax. No capital gains tax, income tax, and company tax. And at that point, then I think a DTA will be on the cards. But there's a lot of countries that don't have a DTA with Australia. Hong Kong is a very popular one. Portugal is another one. UAE is another one. I think last time I counted, in terms of, decent-sized countries that have an expat component, I think it's like 45 countries that don't have a DTA with Australia. So to me, it is a concern. We will push it, and we'll certainly keep everyone updated and let them know how we go.
Absolutely, mate. And I mean, again, it's, I wonder if there's any data that the Australian government can ever get access to in terms of Australian expat populations in different countries, and whether they can use that as a tool or a reason and for a harder push to have a DTA with that country. Okay, we've got 50 or 80 or 100,000 expats over in this one area. we don't have a DTA and we don't even have a tax information agreement, what are we doing? Why don't we? You know,
they do have the data because the local government will share with the embassy how many Australian citizens live in there. So they can collect numbers. It's just a matter of coordinating all those embassies and consulates around the world to try and do that. I mean, that's actually a good segue too, which leads me on to another topic that we're going to be releasing our annual Expat Insights survey next month in July. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye out for that, folks. Please share it to everyone. The information is anonymous, so we're not going to share the data with anyone who you don't want it to be shared with. But it is to date, the biggest Australian expat survey ever done. It'll be our 2018, 2019, 2020, our fourth year of doing this. And really, it's going to be an amazing insight into post-COVID, what the expat community looks like when we go back and look and compare it to, say, 2018, 2019, what that looked like. Mm. So, keep an eye for that, guys. Matt, I think we'll wrap up there. We don't want to bore people too much. Housekeeping issues, guys. Below there'll be the Q&A link. If you've got any questions and answers you'd like answered, please click on that link, send them through. Keep up with the reviews, keep up with the recommendations, and we really appreciate you guys out there.
Sounds good, mate. Thanks for stopping by.
Mate, we'll see you soon.
See you, mate.
Thanks, mate.